So, when you go to the link that is the study question review, there are audio file links. I can't listen to my own voice anymore. But Cal, you talk so much that hearing it another time recorded just puts me over the edge. All right, so those are the things I wanted to talk about. Questions? Comments? Fears, concerns, trepidations? All right, I'll keep trying. So today what I want to do is take a tour of what we're about. It's intended to have some fun with. And the reason for the fun is that this stuff can be fun. Knowing methodology and knowing statistics is a source of entertainment. Because let's face it, every once in a while, you don't mind pointing out that somebody said something silly, did something silly, right? So one of the things you're going to have is a whole new repertoire of stuff to look at. One of the things it comes down to is read every word. This is something that the pink things will drive home. Because there's something like 40,000 pink things total across all the classes and all the exercises. I'm not smart enough to write 44,000 separate things. So whole sets of them are only different from each other by maybe one word, one phrase, something like that. Sometimes that one word changes the answer. Sometimes the whole sentence doesn't change the answer. And one of the things that the pink things does for us is it trains us that as a methodologist and a data analyst and a consumer of methodology and stats, that we have to read every freaking word. A few years ago, for the fun of it, in this class, we did a fairly standard reading comprehension test at the beginning of the semester and at the end of the semester. And in a graduate class full of graduate students, all of whom have really good reading comprehension, we got almost a half of a standard deviation bump from the beginning to the end. Not because of capability, but because of motivation. People were now, because of those freaking pink things, and I don't want to have to do one more of them than I have to, and I don't want to go too quickly through something and have to do one over again, read every freaking word. So that's another bit of magic that I hope for. All right, so let's do PowerPoints. Slideshow, correct slide. All right, 941 is designed to give you information that other people will add to in your other classes, in your life, in your labs, with your faculty advisor, working towards getting out of here. There's a point at which all you will care about is leaving, but leaving well. And what I'm trying to do is help you leave well. All of this is pointed towards a dissertation. The thing on the right is my lighthearted attempt to recognize that you're going to work really hard in here. There's a lot of stuff to learn. The real difficult part about studying anything for the second and the third time is knowing what part really is the same stuff and what part the teacher wants to change the way you think about it, the way you organize it, the words you use, things like this. Okay? There is no one magic taxonomy of all the language, but I believe that I've been shaped towards something that's fairly close to you can start here and change it wherever you go. One of the things you'll hear me say over and over and over again is that you have to know what your research community expects. Whether that's choice of language, whether that's the categories of that language, the designs, the statistics, the way things are described and portrayed, all of that, I'm going to try and give you a place to start to customize your knowledge wherever you end up. But expect to. I will fuss and complain and insist that you use particular words. Because that set of words in that taxonomy has worked well as a starting place. I'm not going to pretend it's an ending place, but I am going to pretend and insist that it's not a bad place to start. Plus, I like the look in that guy's face. All right, the purpose of the class is for you to continue to acquire the common sense of the research communities you intend to join. Notice, continue to acquire. I know this is not the first time you've thought about this stuff, but I'm not going to pretend it is. trying to add to. Common sense has two different roots to it. The notion of knowledge held in common by a research community, and the idea of values and concerns held in common by a research community. What does that research community all know and all care about? That's the stuff we're going to talk about. We're going to try and talk about the things that are held largely in common by large numbers of research areas, and then say, you got to know what your research area expects. So common sense comes in five parts. This is my version. There's lots of versions. And boy, it was fun writing this slide. Trying to figure out what's the list of things that people care about and consider common sense. I like this list. It's public, psychological, and all of our friends in behavioral sciences. Psychological study and knowledge, the idea is that any properly trained and equipped psychologist can replicate the findings of another. That is the intent of the method section. The intent of the method section is not to bore you to sleep. It's not to have a publication cost. It's because that really tells you where the data came from. Remember, the conclusions come from the data. The data come from somewhere. They don't magically appear accurately, honestly, and validly. Somebody went and got them. And you have to decide how you feel about how they went and got them. And that's another part of this. It's another part of read every word. Empirical. We are going to absolutely focus on empirical, quantitative research methodology. I don't ever want to hear anybody say that Cal doesn't like qualitative research. That's wrong. I love it. I just don't teach it in this class. I spent probably a third of the summer doing stuff that would be considered qualitative research. Had a blast. Got to hang out with people that I don't usually get to hang out with. It was awesome. But this is going to be quantitative. Statistical nature. It's all built around data. We're going to get data. We're going to do things with data. We're going to make decisions about data. Data, data, data. Now, these last two are really important because these haven't always been true, even within quantitative behavioral sciences. Hypothesis testing. We hold a special place in our heart for a set of results about which there is a theory, literature-driven hypothesis, and the data confirm that hypothesis. We like that best. That's what we would like to have. We will occasionally have times where the hypothesis isn't fully supported or maybe isn't even partially supported. And then we will look carefully at the data and say, oh, well, we were hoping for that, but here's what we found. And the believability in our community of that finding is less. Now, this is a philosophical decision. It also holds up pretty well when you do very, very large meta-analyses and things. We'll do a little bit of meta-analysis at the end of the semester because everybody should know a little bit about it. And one of the things we'll talk about there is why some people feel we're not in the middle of a replication crisis. We're in the middle of a replicating crisis. We don't replicate things. We don't actually do things the same way several times. And then we're shocked and shaken when we don't get the same result. Embedded in all of that is this deeply held conviction that hypothesis testing and hypothesis confirmation gives us more believable results than post hoc, exploratory, oh, look what I found. That means that when you're analyzing your data, when you're presenting your data, you have to be honest. You're going to hear the word honest in here a lot. You have got to be honest about what part of that is confirmatory and what part of that is post hoc, exploratory, and then plan to go test that the next time, which is the lead-in to the last thing, which we believe in more than anything else, which is convergent programmatic research methods and results. Notice, methods and results. We intentionally replicate results. We intentionally extend results. And then we put all that in a pile. So those are the things that I'm going to call common sense for us. Even while I'm giving it, there's like nine things I want to change. Okay, if I got to bring this game down to two words, these are the two words, representation and inference. Everything we're going to do is representation and inference. The emphasis in this part of the course is the representation, the methodology, the where do data come from. You can't get every behavior from everybody, everywhere, every time that we want to learn about. We have to sample. Now, one thing I'm going to change up on you is that most people have been trained to think of sampling as sampling a sample of people from a population of people. I want to broaden your use of the word sample to where the data came from. And so we're going to ask all the big W questions. Who did we get the data from? Where were they? What were they doing? With what? When? All of that matters. When we're trying to decide if the results we got should be compared to other results to see if they replicated, you got to run the whole list. And there's going to be more. We're going to worry about how it was measured, what the design was, all that stuff. And we'll flesh some of that out a lot on Friday. The whole idea of having the best possible sample is so that when we describe the sample, we are also, from that very same description, inferring back to where the data came from. If you don't know where the data came from, you can't infer to where the data came from. Oh, hell, when you say it that way, it doesn't sound that dumb at all. And that's why the expanded version of sampling. Everything we're going to do in statistics comes down to this. Every statistical test boils down to, is the pattern of data in the sample strong enough to conclude that that's the pattern of data in the population? Now, the phrasing I like to use is the pattern of data in the sample strong enough to believe you have captured what's going on in the population? And people say, you said believe, you're a scientist. I'm a scientist that's going to take those data, analyze them, interpret them, write them up, put my name on it, and put it in public. If I don't believe it, I ain't doing that. When I'm doing consulting, and I crunch those numbers, I got to believe that I go back to that C-suite, that I go back to that executive board, and what I'm taking them, they should make billion-dollar decisions about. So I'm real comfortable using emotional words like, do you believe your data? Or do you have nagging doubts? Because you don't think your who, where, what, and when quite matches up to what you're trying to get done. Representation and inference, over and over and over. The better our sampling, the better our representation, the better our inference, the more useful the knowledge we generate. What are the ways that we need to apply this? One of the biggest differences between, I know that many of you are not, this is not your third day of graduate school. We've got master's students in here. We've got PhDs in here. We've got all sorts of folks. Cool. That's what helps, is you feed off of each other. You ask different questions. You bring up different ideas. But one of the biggest differences between undergraduate and graduate is that most often in undergraduate, you said, here's something worth reading, go learn it. In graduate school, you are told, stuff out there, find it, decide if it's any good, read it, put it together, bring it back, I'll tell you how you did. And so suddenly, before you memorize something, you have to read more than, and this isn't particularly accusatory because I do the same shit, you have to do more than read the title, the abstract, the first three, and the last three paragraphs. Evaluate the quality of proposed research. And I don't just mean a formal proposal or a grant proposal or something like that. I'm talking about when you're sitting around talking about stuff and somebody says, I think we ought to do this. I think this would be wonderful. I think all we need to do is this. Watch out for the phrases just and the synonyms, all you have to. Okay? I learned about this. I grew up in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh starts out on a triangle and then it gets ugly because of hills and bridges and creeks and streams and things. And so directions are a nightmare. And until the 70s, we didn't actually have all of the street signs. And so you learned that when somebody said, oh, all you got to do to get there is just go up here and then, wait a minute, ho, huh? One thing at a time. Watch out for all you gottas. Watch out for justs, implied or expressed. But you're going to have millions of proposed ideas bounce through your head, and you need to not only give them an evaluation from the content that you know, but from the methodology and analysis that you know. And then obviously, perform creative and contributive research. That's the ticket to exit and the ticket to admission almost anywhere that you want to go. Can you actually produce useful knowledge? The usual routine, and I won't do it with you because you already know it, but I do it with the undergraduates. Do you think you can learn everything you need to learn while you're here? No. Is everything that you're going to need to know even available if you do a really good review of the available information? No. So where is this stuff going to come from? You're going to have to solve some problems that are your own problems. And I can tell all kinds of stories of the emails that I get from somebody who said, my boss thinks I'm wonderful because I. When COVID first hit and they shut down the Olive Garden, and then after a while they brought it back, one of the kids called me from Missouri, where they had just been sent as a branch manager that they had never been before. The reason was that when they started back and they were trying to decide how many servers they need, he, one, came up with a model of how to set things up to reduce the number of servers, and then was able to test it, knew how to test it and do the data analysis and take one page to their boss. 6 weeks later, they're running a restaurant. Okay? So, it's powerful. Knowing this stuff, being the one in the room. So what are the kind of things we need to know? Measurement. We can't collect data about behaviors and characteristics. We can't be quantitative empiricists. Typically, measurement is the last thing that you study, because in order to study measurement well, you have to know almost everything else. The data analytics of psychometrics are bleh, compared to regular data analytics. Most of the time, most of us take stuff off the shelf or develop it along with the help of people who are more experienced and exposed in the research area. So we're not going to do very much with measurement other than me say, you need to learn enough stuff to evaluate the measures. Because sometimes that's as far as you get reading an article and you set it down. They tell me that they're studying positivistic attitude. I look at the way they studied positivistic attitude, or the way they measured it, and I don't care anymore. So you got to be able to evaluate measurement, but I apologize, it won't be particularly useful. Research methods, now we're here. Have to be able to make all of those kinds of decisions based on best practices of your research community. There we are, back to throwing it on you. Data analysis, same thing. And content knowledge. Notice content knowledge, first of all, is orange. Orange is good. And it's bigger, because it's special. If you're really going to be good at this stuff, you've got to blend content knowledge with methodological knowledge. When somebody says, can we have an hour-long meeting? I say, no, can we have a three-hour-long meeting? Because we're going to spend the first hour just bringing me up to speed on the content and the history. Because I don't know it. I don't know what your company does. I know that you have recently decided to commit yourself to affirmative action hiring, and you're scared shitless of it. All right. I need to know the history. I need to know this. I need to know that. I need to know if we're under a court injunction to do this. I need to know what the standard practices are in the community, the state, the part of the country, and if there's any funky laws there that we have to pay attention to. Then I can start acting like a methodologist. So you will have to not only have content knowledge, but you will have to remember to solicit it. Nobody wants a know-it-all. I know they're paying good money for me to sit in the room and fix something for them or study something for them, but they do not want a know-it-all. They want somebody that's a help-it-all. And in order to help them, I have to know what they know and then go get data. So here's an example of quantifying behavior. If we're going to do statistics, we need to have numbers. If we're going to have numbers, sometimes we have to create a way of doing it, which means just thinking quantitatively. It's taking something and taking it apart. So for fun, freshman 15. The first year undergraduate students gain, just to pick one, 15 pounds during their first semester. Okay? Gaining 15 pounds in 15 weeks is 1 pound a week. That's not tough math. The math usually isn't hard. You just have to stop and think. 15 pounds a week, holy shit, or 15 pounds, shit, that's a lot of weight. That's a pound a week. Gaining a pound a week is about 3,500 extra calories a week. 3,500 extra calories a week is about 500 extra calories a day. That is a ladle of ranch dressing. Why pick ranch dressing? Because it is the most commonly used defensive food in dormitory cafeterias. Now let's take a moment and think about the concept of defensive foods. That means it tastes so awful that I can't eat it unless I can somehow defend myself from it by putting ranch dressing on it. That's all it takes to pick up 1,500 pounds. To gain 3 pounds a year is 28 extra calories a day. That'll make you paranoid. Holy shit, 28 every day. 3 pounds. Holy shit, there's no wiggle room here. Just saying. Statistics are used to organize, express, and show relationships among the quantifications. All right, this is not a stats class. You will call it a stats class, and I won't bitch much. Statistics is a mathematical discipline. I know that because my middle kid is a mathematician. He has a math degree. I know what math looks like. My math's okay. My math's better with him in the room. And he's had statistics classes a lot. I actually took real statistics courses from the math department in graduate school because I thought the people were wonderful. The people that do, it's kind of like you have a hobby and you get a chance to hang out with people who do that professionally or at a higher level. That's what that was like for me. Because to me, statisticians give me tools, but they actually care about the tools. This is awesome. And there's a constant argument about how much math and statistics you have to know to use data analysis. And I'm pretty much on one end, and here's my usual argument. I'm willing to argue that if I gave you a tree and pointed a piece of ground and hand you a shovel, you could dig a hole and get that tree in. And at no point during that would you have to be able to tell me when that shovel is being used as a first class, a second class, or a third class lever. Because you can use the tool and dig the hole. That's what we're going to do. We're going to do data analysis. We're going to learn how to pick the shovel, use the shovel, and get that tree in. Notice, you need to be able to do more than dig a hole to properly plant a tree. You have to know about dirt and trees at a minimum. So there we are again. In order to use that tool, we have to know more than the tool. I'm going to keep beating that in. And so what we do is driver's ed, not mechanical engineering. We love mathematicians and statisticians. We do. We love them a lot.